Welcome to Redmond Radio for the week of February 20th. In this episode, Microsoft reveals its Windows 8 logo, Microsoft ranks in the top 10 for corporate reputation, and Microsoft releases a beta of the Exchange Bandwidth Calculator. All that news in a second right here on Redmond Radio. Welcome to Redmond Radio, the weekly podcast of news and information for the Microsoft and IT professional. As usual, before we get started, here are the many ways to contact me. First, email me at mdomingo@1105media.com. That's M-D-O-M-I-N-G-O at 1105media.com. My Google Voice number is 760-536-8859, and my Facebook and Twitter accounts are both at Domingo Photo. That's D-O-M-I-N-G-O-P-H-O-T-O. All right, before we get started, how about the answer to last week's trivia question? And that question was, what computing giant was born last week in 1874? And that giant was none other than... It was none other than Thomas Watson. Watson, if you're unfamiliar, was CEO of IBM during its early growth and during its heyday as a mainframe computer warehouse. Or powerhouse, that is. All right, how about another IT trivia question this week related to last week's question? Another computing giant who preceded Thomas Watson was also born last week in 1860. He's credited with inventing the punch card, so that's a little bit more specific, all right? Who was he? If you have a Twitter account, post your answer with the Redmond Radio hashtag. And if you're on Facebook, friend the Redmond Radio magazine or Redmond Magazine page and post your answer there. Well, what can you win? Right now, nothing, but we'll see if we can line up some cool stuff like an Amazon Kindle Fire or something. I don't know if iPads are kind of appropriate, you know, would be a little bit inappropriate for a Redmond Radio podcast, but we might get those too, who knows. Anyways, for now, just winning is the prize, and in any event, good luck and no cheating by searching Wikipedia. All right, let's get started with some news this week. Microsoft last week unveiled its Windows 8 logo. The intention of the design was to reflect the new Metro-style user interface seen in Windows 8 while staying within logo traditions used for past Windows products, ranging from Windows 1 to 7, according to Sam Moreau, Microsoft's principal director of user experience for Windows. The new design has lost the multicolored panes and flag-like aspects seen with earlier logos, he explained in a blog post. The new logo is squarer and flatter than recent iterations, much like the Windows 8 user interface itself. Microsoft previously explained that the Metro UI used in Windows 8 was designed to make it easier to access programs that were getting buried in the start screen menu system. Microsoft made the access more direct through its tile-like UI in Windows 8 while also facilitating touch interactions. With regard to the font being used in the logo, Moreau said that Microsoft is using the International Typographic style or Swiss design that has been a great influence on their Metro-style design philosophy, he said. He also said the font is typically used to indicate directions in subways and airport terminals, so they might find them actually kind of familiar. Microsoft decreased its SQL Azure pricing again and added a new 100MB database storage option. The 100MB storage plan offers a new option for customers getting started on SQL Azure, while the new reduced pricing is aimed at providing discounts to customers with databases at around 5 gigs or so that need to scale, according to a blog post by Steve Martin, General Manager of Windows Azure Business Planning. The new pricing apparently was offered starting last week. The blog post produces a chart showing Microsoft's calculation of storage cost savings as the size of a database grows when hosted on Windows Azure. In December, Microsoft capped the database size cost at $499.95 for the maximum 150 gigabytes of storage possible under the SQL Azure Business Edition. That max cost is now listed by Martin at $225.99. The cost reductions are shown at Microsoft's SQL Azure pricing overview page. The cost is $125.99 for 50 gigabyte storage space, but Microsoft charges $1 for each additional gigabyte of storage thereafter. The lower prices follow earlier SQL Azure cost reductions made in June. Back then, Microsoft had cut some of the charges associated with data transfers. Also last week, Microsoft issued a beta of a new Exchange Client Network Bandwidth Calculator. The beta, which is designed to help those involved in the design phase of Exchange projects, provides a guide for using the calculator on the Microsoft Exchange calculator page. The new tool has been under development at Microsoft for about a year, according to a Microsoft blog post. The company is seeking to improve it with more real-world data before moving off the beta, with a target date to do that by mid-2012. The calculator is designed to work with Exchange deployed on-premises, as well as with hosted Exchange offered through Microsoft's Office 365 services. The calculator is based on the use of Microsoft's email clients such as Outlook 2010, Outlook 2007, and Outlook 2003. Microsoft's web-based email clients are also supported, including Outlook Web App 2007 and 2010. It also derives estimates based on Windows Mobile and Windows Phone Mobile device email clients. Currently, the calculator will not create an estimate from BlackBerry email client use or from other non-Microsoft email client use. Microsoft suggests getting the specific bandwidth use information from those vendors. Also not supported is Outlook 2000 and older versions. Microsoft plans to look into adding support for Outlook 2011 and Entourage in a future release. The calculator is an Excel worksheet-based tool that estimates how much bandwidth will be required to optimally support an organization's email traffic based on the data provided by the user. To use the tool, an IT worker needs to know how many emails are received or sent by each individual box, plus the average message size. Based on those measures, mailboxes will get classified as light, medium, or heavy users, with size estimates in gigabytes. Microsoft's documentation for the calculator recommends using PowerShell to get the data from Exchange 2007 or Exchange 2010. Otherwise, the user will need a reporting tool to get that information. Let's move on to some other news on the security front. Microsoft's February security update included an antivirus and security software fix that told users that Google.com was infected with the Black Hole Exploit Kit. A few hours after complaints began pouring in, Microsoft corrected the problem. A post on its Malware Protection Center site states, on February 14, 2012, an incorrect detection for exploit jsblackhole.bw was introduced and notes that the company issued an update to take care of the problem. Microsoft recommended that users download the most recent versions of the updates, with signature versions 1.119.1988.0 and higher for those keeping score. And the false positive affected users of Microsoft's Forefront corporate security software and Security Essentials scanner software. Reports of something amiss quickly began to surface on sites such as SANS Institute's Internet Storm Center and Microsoft's TechNet forum. Posters to TechNet said the warning about Google began showing up about 5 minutes after users installed the updates. Most users posting comments to the site also suspected it was a false positive. The Black Hole Exploit Kit, which first appeared in August 2010, is crimeware developed in Russia that usually targets Windows operating systems and applications, looking to exploit common security flaws. Black Hole has been used to infect the U.S. Postal Service's Rapid Information Bulletin Board system in April 2011, and most recently to hack into Cryptome.org, a WikiLeaks-style site that publishes leaked files and intelligence documents. In legal news, Cisco Systems wants the European Commission to review its approval of Microsoft's acquisition of Skype. In a blog post last week, Martin De Beer, Senior Vice President of the Cisco Emerging Business Group, indicated that Cisco had lodged an appeal with the EC. He said that the European Commission should have placed conditions that would ensure greater standards-based interoperability to avoid any one company from being able to seek to control the future of video communications. Details about exactly which standards Cisco wanted supported weren't specified. Skype uses its own proprietary and closed-source Skype protocol technology, which enables voice-over IP calls across the Internet via peer-to-peer connections. The Skype service works across multiple platforms, including mobile devices and Sony PlayStation gaming consoles. According to comments made in May by Microsoft CEO Steve Ballmer, Skype's technologies may be rolled into certain Microsoft products such as Outlook, Xbox, Kinect, Messenger, Hotmail, and Link. Link is Microsoft's unified messaging platform for business users, but Microsoft has typically explained that the Skype acquisition is as enabling broader connections for organizations using Link. Skype is primarily a consumer service that gives Microsoft access to about 170 million Skype subscribers. De Beer said that Cisco was only focused on securing standards-based interoperability in the video calling space in lodging its appeal with the European Commission. He also complained about potential vendor lock-in with the integration of Skype into Link. The European Commission dismissed competition concerns back in October when it approved Microsoft's acquisition of Skype. It said at the time that Skype was a consumer product and Microsoft's Link faced adequate competition in enterprise space from companies like Cisco. The U.S. regulatory approval of the deal happened earlier in June. The $8.5 billion deal was announced in May, representing Microsoft's largest acquisition purchase in its company history. Microsoft issued a general statement to various media outlets claiming that it will prevail against Cisco's appeal. According to the statement, The European Commission conducted a thorough investigation of the acquisition, in which Cisco actively participated, and approved the deal in a 36-page decision without any conditions. We are confident the Commission's decision will stand up on appeal. According to the latest corporate reputation survey by market researcher Harris Interactive, Apple has surpassed Google to become the U.S. company with the best reputation. Harris Interactive uses a metric it calls the reputation quotient, or RQ, to measure how Americans regard the most visible companies in the U.S. The research firm asked more than 17,000 people to rate companies based on 20 attributes that comprise the RQ. These attributes fall into six categories: financial performance, products and services, vision and leadership, emotional appeal, workplace environment, and social responsibility. An RQ higher than 80 is considered excellent, and in the 2012 survey, Apple scored an RQ of 85.62, the highest score ever recorded by any company in the survey's 13-year history. Apple's rise in the survey's ranking means last year's number one company, Google, has been bumped down to number two. The internet search and advertising giant scored an RQ of 82.82, down from 84.05 in 2011. Making a return to the top 10 this year is Microsoft, which earned an RQ of 79.87, slightly down from last year's RQ of 80.16. Nevertheless, Microsoft's RQ was enough to place it in 9th in the survey, compared to its 16th place finish in 2011. All right, how about some good news to end this podcast? Last week on Thursday, Microsoft's stock price reached a new high since about 4 years ago. The stock on Thursday closed at $31.28, marking a near 3-point increase compared with the price at about the same period in 2008. A Yahoo Finance chart reports the selling price of Microsoft stock as $28.42 on February 11, 2008. Microsoft has been making the rounds with financial analysts last week explaining its business vision. The company is also preparing to release a consumer preview beta of Windows 8, its next-generation client operating system, at the end of this month. Otherwise, there seems to be no obvious explanation for the uptick. Stock prices fluctuate all the time, of course. Anyhow, that is this week's podcast. And if you'd like to make some comments, go ahead and send them to me at mdomingo@1105media.com. That's M-D-O-M-I-N-G-O at 1105media.com. I do thank you for listening to Redmond Radio, and I will see you here next week, I hope. All right.